Among agencies cracking down on bad contractors, the State Department stands out. In 2009, it took just 8 suspensions or debarment actions. Last year, it reported 96. Corey Rindner is the procurement executive and suspension and debarment official at the State Department. He told us what debarment and suspensions are and what they are not.
If you start with the basics, suspension is a temporary action while you're investigating whether to debar or take some other further action. So debarment is done after you conclude your investigation, and you also have a hearing to get any information from the individual or the company in rebuttal. So debarment is for a stated period of time, generally 3 years. Suspension is generally 12 months, but can go as far as 18 with concurrence of Department of Justice. So there's two different standards when you look at debarment and suspension. The standard for suspension is adequate evidence. So it's kind of similar to going and getting a search warrant. You've got probable cause. You've got adequate evidence that something has gone on. The standard for debarment is higher. The standard for debarment is a preponderance of evidence. So it's that 50-50. It's 51%. It's the evidence shows that the facts are more probably true than not true. Now, your listeners also need to understand that debarment or suspension can happen on procurements, but they can also happen on non-procurement transactions like grants or loans or things like that. So if you look at what are the causes for debarment and suspension, I would put them into two general buckets. One is not being trustworthy, and the other is not being reliable. So if you look at why you're not trustworthy, there would be things like fraud, embezzlement, bribery, antitrust, forgery, false statements, tax evasion. These are all things that show you're not really a trustworthy contractor. You're not really a trustworthy individual or company or grantee. If you look at not being reliable, there you're looking at things like a willful failure to perform, a history of failure to perform, or violation of specific terms and conditions like trafficking in persons or drug-free workplace, or you're delinquent on taxes, or you fail to disclose a violation or an overpayment. So those are the types of reasons why you would have a debarment and suspension.
And Corey, when you talk about this in context of it being the State Department, can you give us some examples, one or two, of some of your recent actions?
I would say probably the most common causes that we're seeing for debarment and suspension are things like bribery, trying to pay money to get business, whether it's a grant or a contract, false statements and false claims. You say, well, there's no real backup for this. Oh, well, what would you like the invoice to look like? Not a good sign. Not a good sign. Deliberate failure to perform.
Where should I deliver the whiskey?
There you go. And this is part of the challenge in State Department versus other agencies, is because we're in the international environment, you may have social customs in countries that are different than our rules. So gratuities or quote-unquote graciousness in a transaction, something that we wouldn't accept in our business practices, may be customary in that country, but we still don't accept them. There's still cause for debarment or suspension.
But several reports from GAO and others have said that the government, across government, has just not been using these tools, suspension and debarment, enough. State has. I mean, you stepped up there. So what's different about state, I guess, than from the average agency that seems more reluctant to use suspension and debarment?
Well, let me first of all dispel a myth about suspension and debarment, and then I'll tell you why our program was ramped up and what we did to ramp up our program. There's a common myth that suspension and debarment is a punishment. You're bad, so we're going to punish you through debarment and suspension. Debarment and suspension is an action to protect the government. A fine and jail time is a punishment. So what we're really looking at in the suspension and debarment community is the present responsibility of that grantee or that contractor. Do we need to protect the government, not punish somebody, but do we need to protect the government by preventing them from getting further grants or further contracts? Okay. So let's take the example of how does the program ramp up and what can other agencies do? The Government Accountability Office did a very good study a few years back about what makes a successful program and what is lacking in unsuccessful programs. And in their report, they highlighted three things, which in retrospect looks common sense, but a lot of times you need an outside prophet to focus you on what needs to be done. So the GAO said three things. Look, you guys need dedicated resources. You need somebody really focused on this. You need dedicated procedures. Everybody needs to know how this thing is going to play out. And you need a good referral process. You need a method for getting cases teed up so that the suspension and debarment official can tackle those cases. So if we look at State Department specifically, we took a look at that GAO report, and we said there's a lot of good common sense in here. We need to ramp up our game in order to make sure that we're adequately protecting the interests of the government. So we identified the need for a dedicated resource, got support from management, and we went out and created the position of the suspension and debarment program manager. We staffed it at a high enough level, and we deliberately didn't make it a legal position, because what we wanted was analysis, what we wanted was process, what we wanted was program management. We've got excellent legal counsel in the Department of State. So if we've got a grants transaction, have excellent grant lawyers. If it's a procurement transaction, have absolutely outstanding procurement lawyers. But we wanted somebody to manage the process and manage the analysis. So that created a good process, good communication, good interaction. Second thing we did is we created a database to track the actions from referral through decision. Because it's not enough to just start at the beginning and the end. There's different steps in the process, and we wanted to make sure that we understood what was happening at these different steps, what was in the queue, so the process would move along smoothly. There's also a government-wide reporting requirement, and so we wanted to make sure we could pull that information easily. We created and issued detailed policies and procedures, and we coordinated those with our Office of Inspector General before we issued them. We didn't want to just assume, well, we do this and they do that. We wanted to make sure both organizations understood our part in the puzzle. And this then leads to what I think is a total win-win, which was a true partnership with our Office of Inspector General on debarment and suspension. We meet regularly to discuss status. We discuss actions and issues. We also discuss what kind of information and how does the information need to be depicted to be effective in a suspension and debarment proceeding. You know, it's not enough to just say, I heard somebody in a coffee shop say that somebody offered a bribe. You need corroboration. You need additional evidence. So saying you've got that, plus you've got copies of emails showing a transaction, makes it a much, much stronger case. So I got to give a shout out on your radio here to Brian and Rose and Karen and the whole crew over at our IG shop that does the investigations and partners with us. We really created a handhold rather than a handoff. Okay? And then training. This is in several different areas. On the government-wide side, you've got the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center in Glencoe, Georgia. These folks have put together an outstanding suspension and debarment class, talks about the causes, talks about how to depict the information, how to do the investigations, really sets the entire community on a standard process. So both the IG folks and suspension and debarment folks go and take these classes. They're outstanding classes. We've taught in our IG's program. Our IG has taught in our program. We've reached out to the grants officers. We've reached out to the contracting officers. And so this training really clues everybody in to the fact that here's a process you're involved in. This then dovetails into the referral process because you've got to get a lead on where something requires a suspension or debarment action. So some of this has come from the training outreach. We'd get folks after a training session coming up and saying, you know, I've got this grantee who isn't performing, and the invoices look really suspicious. Is there something I should be doing? And so we'd be able to refer these cases to our IG for investigation, and they would result in actions. So having the grants and the contracting officers recognize that they're an important part, before they thought, well, it's not my process. Now they know they've got an additional tool. They delight in having that tool, and they've really been part of the process. And the final thing is we've increased our participation in the Interagency Suspension and Debarment Council, the ISDC.
We're speaking with Corey Rinder. He's the procurement executive at the State Department. And you personally, what were you doing before this, and how has your role changed since State has stepped up all these actions?
My role has always been suspension and debarment official, as well as the procurement executive. So I've been intimately involved in all of these changes and ramping up the organization, creating the interaction with the IG, creating the interaction with the contracting and grants officers. So it's really been exciting to see the entire program ramp up.
And have you seen the contractors kind of straighten up and fly right a little bit more?
What we've seen is the contractor and grant community recognizes that this is a very severe sanction. We're seeing more individual disclosures. We're seeing a lot more collaboration with investigations. So I think the entire community recognizes that this is an important tool.
And Corey, when State Department officials or when contractors are in those countries, we're greasing the wheel with bribes or a little bit of extra cash is the norm. What do you tell them now?
We tell them what we've told them before. This is not part of the way we do business in Department of State, and it is not a permissible thing to do.
Has it caused any hardship, though, in those countries because it runs against their cultural norms?
No. It's a question of you're doing business with us. You have to do business with the U.S. government rules.